Education Fireside Chat, and welcome for another episode. And today we are recording episode 147, so I can't believe where time goes and how time flies fast when you're having fun, at least that's what they tell me. Today I have the distinct pleasure and the honor to be joined with Marcus Gaughan. Marcus Gaughan is from a company called Minds on Fire, and he's from Woodstock, Ontario. For my U.S. listener, believe it or not, we have a town called Woodstock, and we're competing with you on that one. And I'm not going to go through the 60s with you guys. I wasn't here. I wasn't part of that. So I'll leave that for the interpretation later on. Marcus, welcome to the channel.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Pleasure to be here as well, and pleasure to be with you as well. So we want to go through a few things today in a general conversation. Typically, what happened on these episodes, Marcus, as the audience would know, we'll go through a bit of an introduction. Everybody on this channel has to tell their story. Everybody's got a story. Can't wait to hear yours. The audience will be very interested in hearing, who's Marcus? What is his story? So why don't we start with that one?
I appreciate that. Well, I am originally from Guelph, so I've been migrating gradually south. Spent about 15 years in Kitchener-Waterloo, and it started my career within the startup world. So working for accelerators, incubators. I came out of Waterloo as in material nanoscience and business. So I brought my science nerdiness sort of met my business love all at once, which was an amazing transition. But startups is where I come from. I mean, that is my love. It's where my heart lives. That's where Minds on Fire came from, all of it. I started out working with an accelerator called Felt Lab up in St. Jacobs, small place north of Waterloo. They were working on the first touchscreen technology, augmented reality, VR, interactive projector technologies. So I got to sort of cut my teeth in the industry as a business analyst in those areas. And we had a lot of fun. I mean, that spurred a few entrepreneurial endeavors. I kind of a strange side story. I was born with really bad eyesight in my right eye and was told forever, can't get laser eye surgery. There's nothing for you. And then about the same time I was coming into university, my grandmother found me a light therapy treatment in St. Catharines. This experimental device, you stare down a metal tube at certain colors of light and it fixes your eyesight. It sounded too good to be true, but it worked almost entirely when I couldn't find anything. And I took that idea and made it portable. I mean, that business idea didn't end up working out, I'll admit right away, but that was my first foray into trying to create something for myself. It led to a partnership with the Waterloo School of Optometry and optometrists in St. Catharines. And I don't know, even when it fell flat on its face, I was hooked. I was addicted. I was in the entrepreneur life forever. And I worked through Communitech, Action Factory, VTech Alliance, you know, a few of the regional innovation centers in Southern Ontario. And then after working with a number of startups, more on marketing, sales, and product design, I had the idea for Minds on Fire. I mean, the name actually comes from neuroscience. I've always been a lover of reading, you know, anything science, technology, space, physics, anything around that, those topics that I can get my hands on, I would read about. And I read an article about, it must have been 15 years ago now, that talked about a group of researchers putting ambitious people under a brain scan. And when they were thinking ambitiously, they found that the way the energy moved through their mind resembled fire. And when I read that, I was hooked. I kept the idea to myself. It was a bit of a personal mantra for a while, you know, be a mind on fire, think like a mind on fire. And I didn't tell anybody. And then I found myself in 2017. I had just gotten into Founder Institute, which was one of the pitch competitions that I had done, one of many. It was a bit of a blur for a couple of years there. And I had a platform I wanted to develop in manufacturing. I wanted to make something where manufacturers with excess capacity could team together, subcontract to each other, share work. And I went to two development houses and I got two quotes, $150,000 and $250,000 for an MVP to bring this thing to life, just to see if I could even get a first client. And as soon as that happened, it had already happened a few times before. And I was around a lot of smart people. I mean, I around coders, around front-end developers. I was playing around in the UI UX space myself, as well as doing all the speaking and competitions, marketing, sales, all the stuff I was up to. And we decided to start Minds on Fire. You know, it's been interesting over the last, I guess we're coming up on 9 years now. It's sort of done a full 360. We started out in agile platform design. We built the manufacturing platform. We launched it in Southern Ontario and into the States. That was a wild ride. And that took us up until, honestly, the day the lockdown started during the pandemic. And we were, I mean, sadly, we were pretty well wiped out overnight. You know, all of our clients were small 2 to 10 person CNC shops that were looking to share work. And when none of them could come to work, it sort of disappeared overnight. Then we started pivoting, you know, 2020, 2021. We were looking for areas that weren't as locked down, you know, to say it in a way. We were bringing startups to venture pitch competitions. You know, we were lucky enough to get in with a few family offices, enterprise groups, high net worth investment groups, and had a lot of fun with that for about 2 years. That took us into, I mean, Bahrain to Dubai. It took us through virtually into Europe, down to Las Vegas, Toronto. So we were trying to help as many people see their dreams become wildfires across the world as much as we possibly could. And then in 2022, 3, 4, we got back to what we were meant to do. I mean, we got back into building platforms for people, you know, whether it's a mobile app, whether it's something, an internal ERP for an industry specific application. Just, we love wiring information together, making it look amazing, making it flow amazingly well. And then automation started to develop, AI came around, and we, of course, you know, we dove headfirst into it. We made sure we were with the times as we've come forward. And it's been incredible. I mean, I just got off of a call designing a government procurement application to help small companies team into state and municipal level procurement platforms. We're playing in the finance world with, you know, financial advisors, high net worth investors, landscaping projects, another plumbing ERP coming up in January. And it just won't stop. Like, I swear this is the busiest December I've ever seen in my working life. Like, I thought everyone would be sleeping by now, but we're going right up to the finish line. Like, I got meetings all the way to the 24th. It's been incredible. Entrepreneurship has been my driving force forever. I mean, one of my earliest memories, I think I must have been 5, 6, 7 years old. I remember asking my dad, we're walking downtown Guelph, and I go, how did all the buildings get here? And he goes, so what do you mean? Like, construction companies, they build them. And I go, no, I know, but who chooses? You know, why? Like, why that building? Why that business? Why the mall? Why this? I've always been fascinated by just the systems that construct the world around us. And I love it. So we are through and through. We're here for building companies, helping them bring ideas to the world, and then setting them on fire. We love it.
So from Mind on Fire to setting up businesses on fire successfully, obviously.
Absolutely. When I went to name the company, I thought, okay, Mind on Fire is a little isolationist. That's a little too independent sounding. And I had a team around me, so it made a lot more sense. I mean, Mind's on Fire, every time I think about it, I feel a little heat behind my eyes. I love it.
No, you just gave me an image. I mean, brains can. Scan is on fire from an energy. I feel like I need a Tylenol by the end of this image, but that's okay.
No, that's not what we're going for. Don't say that.
Excellent. Now, for those who are not too familiar with Minds on Fire, what does it actually do? Like, can you explain what does the company do? I know you build platforms, but is there specialties in those platforms? Is there like specific direction you go? Like, I want to do this for service company, manufacturing companies, whatever. You mentioned a few other industries, but is it just building platform? Not just, I mean, is it only building platforms or are there other things?
Well, I mean, building a platform without bringing it to a market, you know, it'll fall flat in its face. I mean, without that strategy behind it. So, I mean, generally the conversation centers around trying to unlock a market, trying to undercut, you know, an underserved or an overpriced market. I mean, we're looking at platforms in consulting that allow companies to essentially get an Ernst & Young level consulting report for themselves, you know, that looks at their technology stack, at their stakeholders, at the projects they're taking on, their finances. Yep. When it comes to, say, a landscape management platform that we are contracted to build, we will be launching that in February. This one will give landscaping companies that are typically paying a few $1,000s a month to a lead gen company, and then a few hundred or $1,000s a month to a service titan or someone like that, an all-in-one platform to build their businesses. And we've made sure to keep this specialization the entire time. I mean, we're very agile. I mean, we build platforms extremely quickly. I mean, the call that I got off of just now, we were speaking to the client about this procurement platform. I had my head developer on with me, and by the time our hour call was done, he already had the framework and most of the data scraped and a dashboard built. I mean, and that's only been possible for about, I'd say, 6 to 8 months as we found new, better and better tools that help us speed up that prototyping phase. I mean, that was always the most difficult part. I mean, we find that when a company or a person comes to us with an idea, I mean, generally, if they can describe a problem to us, we can build a platform around it. You know, the processes will be, they will make themselves fairly obvious. I don't want to oversimplify the process, but it's all very human. I mean, as being in entrepreneurship, I mean, you know, especially through accelerators and incubators, that it's always people. Like, as much as we stack layers and layers and layers of technology over top of everything, it all comes back down to us. So when we speak to a new client about a platform, that's the biggest piece is, okay, what are you trying to do? Here's the problem. Here's what we need to streamline. Here's what we need to be better. And then we talk to them about, what does this look like in person? You know, how are people interacting with this process? What is the outcome? How does the problem affect them now? What are the costs, pros, cons, all of that? We go into a big strategy session. And generally out of that, we find a spine, like that one process that takes it from problem to solution, that takes it from idea to execution. And then we try to stay very tight. You know, a lot of the time, I'd say almost every conversation, we'll talk about, you know, what's your dream of this? What do you want the platform to do? And we'll go into what would turn into 10, 20, 30 different modules of this complicated platform. And then suddenly there's this point where we'll have a bit of an epiphany. Like, okay, hold on a second. So you actually need ABC to happen, this information comes in, repackage, send to them at the right time, and you're already about 80% there. And then it's bells and whistles, making it unique, you know, making sure that we're doing something special, that we're not just coming into the market as the next iteration of what's already out there. And we have a lot of fun with that process. I mean, platforms, it comes back to neuroscience. I mean, we all see this, like all the solutions that we're building, it comes back to a structure. It comes back to where it lives in people's minds. And I love that piece. I mean, every platform comes down to, how is it going to change reality? This may be a little boastuous, but I like to think of us as reality benders. You know, we come into markets and we shift the narrative, we shift perspectives. We shift people's expectations on how a solution.
100%. You have to do that.
Absolutely.
If somebody comes into you with a problem, may not be a problem at some point. I mean, just maybe, or the problem may be here as according to them, but it end up being on the other side of what you guys were talking about or the discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it always takes a different shape once we really break it down, and then, you know, building a platform, it's fun and it's interesting, but we have a lot more fun taking it to market. So we also come with, you know, the tools to launch it, the marketing plan, go-to-market strategy. We look for partnerships as often as we can. If we find something that looks like it's easy to implement, you know, easy to structure, we try not to get too complicated, like get too many cooks in the kitchen kind of deal. But that's what we do. I mean, we build platforms to package solutions in better ways. We use the best tools that we can. We're building a lot of custom AI, which is great for different applications and manipulating information, repackaging content, you know, the way that people flow through and how we react to people and personalize. But yeah, we have a lot of fun with it.
So I know you mentioned this a bit in previous conversation about working or growing smarter, not louder. What's your definition of that?
Smarter, not louder. I mean, I think that makes me think about all the money that people are starting to learn they don't need to spend with.
On marketing, you mean? Is that the idea?
On marketing, yes. I mean, loud. It used to be the loudest company in the room got the business. I mean, if you had the most money, then you would win. I mean, today it's hyper-personalized. You have to get extremely, extremely detailed about how you enter a market, who you enter in with. We all hear about ICPs and avatars all the time. I mean, that's, we've been living there forever. And I mean, it's fascinating.
We turned ICP into an avatar, right? Did we?
Oh yeah. That's the evolution. It's like whatever the word of the year is, there'll be some new word for it next year. Like
whatever. For our audience who are listening to it right now, ICP stands for Ideal Customer Profile. For those who don't know the acronyms, I just want to make sure that we are not talking about some, I don't know, vaccine or something. No, we're not doing that.
No, I wouldn't dare. No way.
Oh, that's perfect. So you're not proponent of spending a lot of money and being loud, but you're more proponent of zooming in, going laser focus on the target that you want to go in and do a good job with that. Am I hearing you?
Absolutely. I mean, I learned that from being in the incubator and startup and accelerator world. I mean, you didn't have the money to do that. I mean, you were starting with maybe if you were lucky, you had a bit of investment capital. But even then, the terms along that, you can't just spend it like it's yours. You know, you're trying to be extremely targeted, whether you've been given $500,000, $5 million, $10 million, they want you to make sure that you're finding return on every dollar as much as possible. So every project would always start with a very, very, you know, specifically selected pilot customer. You know, you're looking for one company that is not only your ideal customer, but that loves the product. You know, you're looking for someone that is even willing to buy in before it's ready. Sorry?
Be your ambassador. You're looking for somebody to become your ambassador, right?
Absolutely. And if you pick that person correctly, not only do you get a partner to either fund you or at least give you the best feedback that you could possibly get, typically we find that is where your market will be launched from as well. I mean, most of the projects that we have, they start growing to their first 5, 10, 15 clients through referrals. Like we don't even need to start with marketing for the first while. And I've learned that if you have to start with marketing, unless it is because you are doing something that's simply an iteration of something that's been done, if you've improved on something that already exists, then I can see that. You know, you need to push your way into the industry. You need to show to a broader audience what you do differently. If you're doing something new, generally, if it is not so good that a pilot customer finds you and is referring you out to a few other clients, if it doesn't naturally spread like that, then there's more work to be done. Or at the very least, you better buckle up because you must be bumping into someone who's already done something similar, and you will now need to find that marketing capital and you'll need to do sales and cold calling, whatever. We try our best to try to find the most new version of whatever we're doing or just chase ideas that are novel in the first place.
And is there a lot of those out there? I mean, I would expect that every idea has been tested by now.
I'm definitely in agreement with that. I believe that if an idea pops into my head, at least two other people have had that idea either at the same time or before I did. If it hasn't already been tried, started, failed in another industry, that's absolutely true. But time, geography, I mean, they're still extremely meaningful. I mean, I'm a lover of history. And I mean, they were dreaming about computers 2,000 years ago, you know, devices where you could click a button and it would think for you. I mean, every idea has been thought of, but the timing and the positioning and where we are as a, whether it be a local, regional, national, global society, is still extremely important. I mean, there's still the right time is a huge piece of this. You know, I think every idea has been thought of, but it's the right execution, the right passion, place, time, all of that, that is extremely important. So that's a huge part of what we look at when we evaluate markets.
So when you say, for instance, things like growth operating system, what are the non-negotiable components, in your opinion, to create a growth operating system?
Sure. Well, I'd say that comes to information. I mean, if you are not lightning fast in how you deliver solutions, then you're done. I mean, speed is absolutely everything. It has been forever. Even more so today, when people can not only beat you to the punch in a market, but they can also build a prototype within days or compete against you. Yep. I mean, a growth operating system starts with information. Like it's the right information at the right time to the right people as quickly or as perfectly timed, I'll say, as you can, you know, depending on sales cycles, business cycles, and whatever industry you're in. But that's where it starts, as we figure out
information.
What information do you need? It's information. How do we get it there as quickly as possible? And then we, as quickly as possible, go into automation on that as well. You know, we find that best core of what you do. We automate it to the right people, and then we iterate out from there.
And you've been doing this for a while, so you must have seen so many scenarios of my following question. And I've You know, I've seen my share of it, but I'm interested in your opinion. Where do you feel like the biggest disconnect between strategy, sales, marketing, or tech, meaning operation or solution?
Oh, man, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is people. I mean, the different perspectives that come across those different departments. I mean, when
you're probably looking for alignment, right, between all components. That's ideal, but that's utopia. Is there a utopia out there for that?
I'd say there is eventually, briefly. You know, like you always need to have those iterations and changes. Everything will break eventually, but that's the golden moment that you're looking for. You know, when you find the way to word your offer in a way that brings clients in immediately, but in a way that is actionable, profitable, that everyone understands, that you can build timelines around that makes sense. It takes a lot of work. And I mean, that's something that used to bother me a lot. You know, if we couldn't get it perfect first, if we couldn't get it all the way from marketing through sales, through operations, through execution, flawlessly right away, yep, that would bother me. You know, I would feel like, this entire idea needs work, et cetera, et cetera. But we find it's fairly flexible. I mean, if you really care, and especially now that we can automate, you know, if you start something and it starts to break, but you get right back to your clients on what's being fixed with apologies, with making up for it, with whatever you need to, you can hold the business in place for a fairly long time, even if you need to make those changes and iterations. I mean, it just takes practice and experimentation.
You know, in any business that I've been involved with, and, you know, I've been so many years and working for so many people, it always baffled me, like the go-to-market division or whatever you want to call it, team or segment of the company that you work with, and the delivery arm of the company or delivery department, division, et cetera, operation, they call them. There's a big disconnect between the two. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. You know, sales and go-to-market in charge of go get me revenue and operation try to, well, not try. I mean, they want, because it is what it is. It's operation, basically delivery. Hmm. They want less delivery. It sounds like they want less delivery or status quo delivery. Growth meaning more delivery, more meaning more stress on the delivery machine, which probably gonna throw things out of line a little bit. And I don't know if you've experienced that in Minds on Fire or not, or you may have designed it differently. I have no idea, but it's something that it strikes me every day almost in today's world, and I just can't believe it.
Hmm. Well, the way we've been able to fix that, because I mean, before Minds on Fire, I had sales jobs, you know, with the startups we used, and a lot of them, they would have to contract out whatever their delivery or operations or execution was, and so there was a massive disconnect. You know, not only was it the two teams not talking, it could be the startup and then a company, like an electrical company that you've contracted to do this for you, and you might not be their priority. You might not be the first thing they think of. You know, you don't have systems in place that connects the companies. With all the automation and AI we have now, I mean, that problem, at least from what we're seeing, is getting much easier to solve. And it's information flow. Like, you can talk about work culture. I mean, it's one of the first pieces. You know, when you're driving a sales team, but then operations is not there in the pump up motivation meetings and thinking about what North Star you're chasing, it's easy for them to get lost. And you'll have that group that sees it as a job and that group that sees it as you taking over the world. And that creates that big disconnect. But we build that into, at the very least, all of our trades platforms, you know, massive amount of automated updating, which doesn't always solve the entire problem right away. But, you know, if you have it going both ways, if you have operations getting good communication on sales and new projects coming through, and the opposite, sales getting timelines, lead times, completion dates, where projects are in the pipeline, it at least gets easier to bridge the gap. You know, when one of them feels out of touch, you have something to carry in your hand or bring back to that meeting and talk about. I mean, it's always an issue, but we're trying to fix it as well as we can. I mean, it's just all information flow.
So I'm starting to get you a little bit, Marcus. For every problem, there is a system solution. I'll fix it by building a system for that. You guys are not communicating well enough. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to build it in the system.
100%. I do not believe on sitting on problems. Like, I can't stand that. It's like, okay,
so instead of programming people, you believe instead of programming people, training and maintaining that programming, but training people, coaching them. 100%. Maybe it's easier to develop a system around that.
Absolutely. I mean, AI was the best thing ever. It just sped up the process. Most AI really is just moving information around. Like, that's really all it comes back to. And it's now gotten easier and easier. I love it.
You know what, though, on that one note, many people I've talked to, they believe like adding tools and more software, apps, whatever you want to call it, it facilitates more progress. But sometimes it makes things worse. Does that ever happen to you?
Absolutely. We frequently, I mean, we've gotten fairly tight with the tech stacks that we build, but there are a lot of moments when we have two more clients coming up in January with the exact problem. I mean, they have, as most businesses do, you know, you don't get to start with a perfect system. You start with just making the business work, bringing business in, just executing on what you have at the time. And so you find yourself after 1, 5, 10 years with this scattershot of technologies that you've been just putting band-aids on to connect your processes. We always meet companies where they are. I mean, there are a lot of the time when we build a platform, we've sort of moved out of the pre-revenue startup world where it was better because we get to start with the system from scratch and build properly, but then it's more difficult. I mean, you don't have the budget, you don't have the experience, you don't have any of that testing that's been done in the product. So now when we come into companies and build a platform for them, we always have to meet them where they are. So we come into a number of pieces of technology. That's a huge part of the strategy conversation that we have, is just, what are you doing now? What's working well? What isn't? We look at those apps. And to fix that, we have even created a platform that we use internally. Now, we call it the application rationalization dashboard. It's internal, so we would have a better name for it if we were selling it outward, I promise. But this scores this with a bit of work with IT, a bit of integration from our team. You know, we plug this into all the technologies that people are using, whether it's operations, marketing, sales, admin, and we give them a heat map of all of it. We find what they should divest from, what they should migrate, what they can integrate together. So that it's come up enough times that we've even built a platform to help us get through that. So that's a big part of our strategic process, is if a company says, you know, we have processes, here's the business, but we're lost in this, and they start going down the list of all these SaaS platforms that are charging their credit cards every month, we've even built a platform that we can plug all of those into, get a good, you know, objective view on everything that they have, look at the pros, look at the cons, cut away what is unnecessary, and then build from there. So that's a big part of the process. It's not just us building a system to build a system. You know, it has to fit in where the business is now, what they need, what they're already doing. And so I hear you. Tech stacks are everywhere. I mean, I've got half a dozen conversations next month about, how do we make Salesforce do this? How do we make Cantico do this? Looking at Magento, you know, looking at different platforms, and how do we take where we are and get to where we want to be, rather than wiping the slate clean? And I mean, I know there are probably some other tools out there, but we've built a bit of a suite for ourselves so that we can do that with certainty and no, you can keep this because it's effective to this degree. So keep that in line, bring it with you. We'll integrate our platform in, you know, here, here, and here. We'll move this information in such a way. So it comes up all the time. But again, I don't know. I don't sit around staring at problems for very long. Like, we build around them and build through them as often as we can.
So speaking of building, let's talk revenue metrics. And I know you and I've talked about that before, but just for the audience's sake here, as we continue telling the story about your company, mine's on fire. What are the top three metrics you insist on seeing before you do anything else? What is most important to you?
Interesting. Well, we definitely look into, you know, what products, what services a company are selling now. Like, we absolutely need to know what the profit margins look like on that, what your costs are. Like, if we don't see that almost accounting statement of your core solutions, then we don't know how much margin we have to play with. We don't know where we can grow. So, I mean, we look at the internal costing around whatever a company's doing. Then we look at price, so your top line price against the industry. That's a huge one for us because, I mean, we hear this all the time. Most people are not charging enough. But just saying that is not enough. Like, we need to know not only what other people are charging, but what package of services you're giving under that, what value. Well, like, really, how do you prove it? And then this is I'm not sure the exact kind of name of this metric, but we want to try to put a dollar value to the value of your service to people and then bring your price in beneath that. You know, we always want to make sure that the value that people are getting always feels like it's a little bit further than what they needed to give you, because that's where you get your customer loyalty. That's where you get repeat business. That's where you grow your reputation as being high value. So those internal costs, your pricing, and that overall value. I mean, if we get into the marketing side of things, you know, we've got our ROAS, our cost per click, our lifetime values. There are other numbers that come in beneath that. But platforms generally, You know, there it's rare that we have a platform where people want that platform just to do the same thing better. Typically, it's we want to upgrade, we want to add in more services, we want this platform to extend what we do as a company. So we're looking at upgrading the value of everything they do with the platform so they can do what they do better and then add on extra pieces. And with all the automations you can do now, usually that's providing more information faster in different forms to your clients, whether it's trades, whether it's procurement, whether it's finance in any area. There are quite a few, but it also does, it's a little unique kind of case to case.
And so speaking of that, I just thought of that. What is the ideal customer for you? Like what stage are they in? Small to medium sized companies? Can I, large organizations, big corporations? From an ICP, which one is that?
Absolutely. I'd say there are two islands within that. So when someone wants a platform where this is the platform that's going to let them grow. So these are where we get most of our custom platform builds. Those are your medium-sized companies. They're going to be, you know, 2, 3, 4 million up to maybe 10. So they're on the small to medium size. They have enough cash. They know what they're doing. They know they've proven their concept. They've got a healthy audience base and customer base, but now they need to wire it all together. You know, they want to automate information from their suppliers, from their partners. They want to feed it to customers more easily, more effectively. They want to add in more services to that. And then the second island would be our large, even enterprise clients, typically are not looking for a new platform, but they're looking for custom integrations. And what typically comes in, and back to what you were talking about the tech stack, mm-hmm. typically they're heavily ingrained in what they've been using. You know, it's extremely difficult for us to walk in and say, just cut this, do this, do that. You know, they're very ingrained. So we end up building what we call middleware. You know, so we will essentially a custom integration on steroids. You know, it's not just about wiring each system together. We'll create a center portal. We'll create a front end that goes out to their technicians, their field offices, their other business units. It's adding it onto the framework that they already have. And then we'll still run our rationalization software. And if there's something that is absolutely blinking red and we can make a good argument, we may take it out. But a lot of this is meeting companies where they are, you know, with the problems they're facing, what they know they need. And we build custom into that rather than trying to come in and say, wipe the slate clean, trust us, do this entire re-implementation and it'll all work out in the end. We try to meet them where we are.
And you do a little bit of reality check, I'm assuming, with them, right? So basically, sometimes the expectation needs to be managed, right?
Yeah, that's a tough one. That can be a bit of a minefield. I mean, some love it. You know, some you walk in and they're like, okay, I know what I don't know. Rip this apart. I want all the questions. And other times, you're walking on eggshells. You know, you want to make sure you're only adding, not taking away. You're only complimenting what's there. But typically, once we get into performance, that opens up either way. I mean, if they aren't open to the conversation initially, when we launch that first module, that first pilot, and we show we can get you a little better of a margin, a little more profit, you know, open up a market over here that you couldn't get into before, the conversation gets better and better. You know, okay, what are the larger processes that we can optimize or that we can cut away or that we can reinvent? That's always a moving target, those reality check conversations, but they get easier and easier.
Absolutely. Who's your competitor? Like, who do you think, okay, so I'm in this field, I'm happy, I'm busy, I've got my work cut out for me. And you know, the field is pretty wide. You know, you're competing with, if I can get it correctly now, you're competing locally with few companies, but you know, you're competing with the nearshore companies, you're competing with offshore companies, you're competing blend of the two. I guess it's a two-part combination. Who's your competitors and what's your go-to-market format, I guess?
I mean, you know, that's evolving. I mean, even this year has been a massive test. I mean, we were often compared now to marketing agencies because everybody's getting into some form of automations. You know, I find that if you can operate a go high level account, you've become an automator and an integrator, and you can call yourself almost a platform builder. That's been a bit of a tough one. I mean, a lot of our business comes from referrals, which is awesome. I mean, because when we do work, it's usually very bespoke, very unique. We know we're manipulating data in ways where it's not just about manipulating data. You have to come up with insights that no one's ever come up with before. So competitors, I mean, most marketing agencies that are innovating into the space now will do something that they may be able to say is near what we do, but with how we play with data, well, I mean, we don't just take your standard attribution and enrich data with some AI platform. I mean, we're taking data from large swaths of social sentiment. We're taking it from financial markets. We're taking it from industry reports. We're taking it from government information sources. I mean, you just have to get more clever, more aggressive with the quality of data that you bring in to find that go-to-market strategy initially. I mean, you're trying to go in first with a way to sell to a market that the market has never seen before. And that gets harder and harder, but that's just the bar we hold ourselves at. I mean, if we can say that a platform has been used before, we rarely touch Google anymore. You know, we rarely touch Meta. We have a few retail clients that we like that we still run some campaigns for, but that's why most of the platforms that we're in, I mean, we're talking about finance, we're talking about wealth advisories, we're talking about large trades companies that are innovating their practices, breaking up into commercial, doing B2G work. I don't know. We have a number of competitors, but we just keep raising the bar to try to get up into the clouds past them. And it's been working well. It just tests us. We're constantly pushing what we're building.
So how did you go from a platform builder to a being tagged as a marketing system builder?
Well, I mean,
is that what your area of focus? Is that how you pivoted?
Well, we want to be going towards a marketing agency, I'd say in 2021, 22, 23, it was just out of necessity. I mean, the market was shaken up. Our automations AI wasn't quite there yet. People weren't ready to buy into it yet. You know, the craze hadn't started. So we did what we had to do so that we could keep the team together and so we could keep helping companies. We never wanted to be that because we know they're a dime a dozen. I mean, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, marketing is the process of building companies. I love it. Like, I've used marketing agencies. I've been one. I know of many successful ones. But coming out of the startup world, if we aren't pushing the envelope, if we aren't doing something new, then it doesn't excite me. And I think that's our best trait. That's how we kind of stay alive.
So, you know, I have to ask the question about AI and automation. You mentioned it earlier. Some people are, from what I gathered, some people are using it wrong. Where do companies get AI wrong, in your opinion, right now? Like, what is the best example of that?
Well, I think, first of all, thinking that the ChatGPTs and Claudes and all of that really means AI is where a lot of people get tripped up. I mean, large language models, I mean, I don't know. It's machine learning. It's a bit of creativity on, you know, word prediction. I know it is technically artificial intelligence, but it really doesn't give you true intelligence. What we're talking about is building multi-layer neural networks with very unique data sets being brought into it. I mean, our best right now is in finance. I mean, we are combining social stock market data, private market data, wealth analytics that we have from multiple other platforms, custom integrations. Like, we are pulling massive data sets together that actually give us the ability to come out with truly novel information based on real life insight. I think that today, I mean, AI has been thrown around too much for years. And I think that the majority of what people call AI is just automations. You know, it's just automating. It's all sequences and triggers and conditional logic. You know, it's if person clicks this, then send this. There's no AI to it. It's email marketing in multiple different media forms. I think that what we miss, though, as well, is that there has been true AI for years, but it just has specific industry applications. You know, you'll find true AI in science, in finance, in technology. You'll find it behind the scenes running systems. I think that the problem is that what has been outwardly faced in the retail settings that we see and called AI has really watered down the definition of it. But I don't know. We get caught by it sometimes. I catch myself saying AI when I talk about a chatbot and things like that, but I really try not to.
You know, we started this conversation about marketing, right? So we did not really put a, you know, positive spin on that. And it seems to me that where we are right now with AI, it's about somebody did a good job marketing it that way.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
And I don't believe, you know, based on what I've talked, you know, the people that I talked to and the individuals, like, you know, they're in the field of academia on that stuff. Doesn't sound, when you talk to the academia part, it doesn't sound like they're talking about it from the same perspective as a consumer is talking about it. They're talking about it from a scientific point of view, and it doesn't point to much of an intelligence other than pattern recognition.
Absolutely.
In a large set of data.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So tell me, like, from a company perspective or companies around you, how are you handling, you know, skills and finding the right side skills? Because you seem to be busy, seem to be growing. So how are you handling the staffing part? Are you still finding what you need? And now I guess the world is connected. You don't need to have them in Woodstock. You can have them anywhere, really.
Absolutely. I mean, I have the benefit of being a talker and loving meeting people all the time. So I've never had a problem finding people with better skills, someone who knows something that we don't. I mean, I'm finding the new cutting edge, the bleeding edge all the time. I mean, we have quite a mix of a team. I mean, we have some in Canada, we have some offshore, we have teams in the States, and it comes out of necessity, and it starts with clientele. I mean, it starts with people coming to us and saying, okay, we've tried this, can you do this? And if we don't already, we're rapidly able to get ourselves up to speed. In terms of our team, I mean, we have people that have been with us for over 5 years now. We have some that have been in here for months. We have some that have been for, you know, a year, 2 years. And I'm happy to say, I don't think other than maybe one person that anyone has ever left the team in a negative way. I mean, we've had to be fluid.
That's the good news.
But because of us being fluid and how quickly the industry moves, I mean, generally, if someone is feeling like they don't want to do the new version of work, we're sending them off to someone that we know, another business that we like, a partner that we've used in the past. And then in the same way, a lot of the people that work with me are themselves CEOs. You know, we have a lot of partners. We try to bring in the best minds and the best knowledge, the best techniques that we can. And it's been great. You know, we have a number of support staff, but the majority of the people I work with, they also own their own businesses. So we meet as peers and we innovate together. We find that is the best way to do this, because then it's like, imagine having a group of 10 employees and every single one has the drive that you do. I mean, that's the stereotype we all hear about. No one you hire is ever going to work in your business as hard as you will. Well, we're trying to cut through that. And I think that we found that it comes with its own set of challenges here and there. I mean, when you meet as equals, sometimes you can butt heads, but I don't know, a little conversation, a little laugh, like a dinner always smooths these things out. So we try to stay as a, you know, a patchwork of partners that have worked together for years and then bringing in just capable people whenever we need them.
Hey, Mark, so you're still part of that Wilfrid Laurier Startup Lab?
I am. We just had our end of year party 2 nights ago, actually. I am.
And you enjoy mentoring other entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs?
I love it. It comes with its not challenges at all, but it's a little funny looking back. You know, sometimes you'll have, and it's not even necessarily students, you'll have some people come in who are hard-headed, you know, don't want to admit that the first idea they had maybe isn't the thing that will take it to that billion-dollar dream that they have. But I absolutely love it. I mean, I learn as much from just seeing new business ideas and how they've already tried to go to market, with their experiences, what they've come from. I love it. I mean, the Laurier team is awesome. We all have fun. And then we just get to see new ideas and pick them apart. And often I'll have an idea. You know, I'll be able to, in conversation with another entrepreneur, we'll come up with a new way of going to market or a new way of selling or a new way of communication. And it kind of keeps me sharp. You know, you don't get paid. It's not the stress of a client. You know, it's not the stress of deadlines. You just get to sit there and innovate and brainstorm and kind of mess around and then go about your day once you get out and hopefully like make some people some money along the way, make their dreams come true. I love it.
And is the whole idea of that $1 billion dream that early founders or early startups, is this the only one that comes to mind in terms of repeat, wrong perspective on developing an idea?
Well, I mean, that's a little bit my fault. They're not all coming in saying they want $1 billion.
No, not everybody. I mean, some of them do, I'm assuming.
No, of course. I mean, I think that as long as you come at it with a healthy dose of realism and humility, you need to be that ambitious. You know, as long as you aren't naive or immature about it or thinking it's supposed to happen or you deserve it, as long as you don't go to that kind of narcissistic side that it's easy to bend into when you're trying to become a business owner, I think if you keep a real problem in mind, but also the drive to take it into the stars, I think that's the perfect combination. I mean, you need that. Like, you cannot, you know, I hear one term that I've just come to, I don't know, just not care for is the, I'm about to lose it. The imposter syndrome. You know, that phrase.
Make it till you make it, right? Is that the idea?
Well, and that's the better way to put it. It's like, don't call it imposter syndrome. Just call it not there yet. You know, in development, still learning, still training. I mean, I think it takes, if we didn't have a touch of naivety in entrepreneurship, then I mean, we'd all shut our own businesses down at some 100%. Point. Like, there's 100%. Always a wall that you hit. So I think it's absolutely necessary to have that guiding light and North Star in, but a touch of realism, I mean, is all you need. Just
for sure. And is it still like, you know, the chances of success in starting something new from, you know, a young entrepreneur perspective, is it still like the same chances at winning the lottery, or are we closer to a bit more chances now of success than winning the lottery in Canada?
You know, I think the increase in chance and the increase of failure are almost increasing at the same rate. You know, there are more ways to succeed, but more people who know now that there are more ways to succeed. I mean, for example, the procurement platform that we're putting together, with the data that we were able to find, with the system that we can now build in a couple days to deliver that information in an effective way, we will be taking this from idea to revenue in less than 3 weeks, which used to be insane. I mean, when I was trying to build platforms, you know, you would start out with saying 6 months and you'd see where you were after 3, 6, 9 and watch it balloon. And you'd always hear the 3 years that you had to lose money. There are all these stereotypes of it. It's much more rapid for deployment. And if you've if you've been very honest with yourself and really challenged your research and challenged your thinking on an idea, you can bring them to market very rapidly now. And as long as you're thinking very industry specific, start with a niche. You don't have to stay there forever, but making sure that you're thinking very, very intelligently from the client perspective, it's much easier to, I'd say, get off the ground, get into revenue. It's much easier to develop. But then at the same time, the markets are extremely crowded. I mean, there is a business for every niche, not even down to industry, but down to like streets of a city, neighborhoods, down to specific technologies, specific actions that say a company will take if they're like a service-based company or whatever it is. I'd say it's both. You know, it's easier to launch. It's easier to grow. It's also much easier to find competition, much easier for other people to iterate you. I mean,
to finance, right? So, I mean, I'm assuming you need financing, right?
Most of the time. I mean, that's the benefit with working with partners, is that typically you've all built enough that you can kind of quilt together a platform. And then once you doctor the information and present it in a new way, that raises a good point. I mean, you do have to get much more creative in how you build businesses now. Like, it isn't buy a bit of material, throw up a website, get your first client, treat them so well that they come back 50 times. I mean, that's always going to be a core of it. But now you need to get extremely, extremely smart with what information you're pulling, how you deliver it, who, when, where, why. All of it, but it's doable.
Yeah. So I've got a few more questions here as we wrap up, and they're very quick, so I won't keep you too long. Just sticking to the timeline here. So one software or one tool you cannot live without, can you tell me right now? Can you tell me what it is?
Go High Level. Even though I bash it, that is still the core of our marketing engine for anything. I mean, we're building the best tech that we possibly can, but don't reinvent the wheel. I mean, that is a great one. Get a good integrator. Get someone who knows how to actually use it to its full potential. Build workflows in so that you can forget about all of the repeatable things and just work on chasing the North Star.
And one book or idea that shaped your thinking recently.
Interesting. One book or idea that shaped it. I don't know if this is quite recent, but I'm thinking back to a book, the book, The Power of Habit. I mean, that was an absolutely enormous one for me. It started out helping me break habits, and now I find myself going back to it on how to manufacture them. So I love it. I mean, habitual nature, customer behavior, that's at the core of absolutely everything. I love that book.
And one piece of advice you wish every founder heard earlier.
Ooh, that heard earlier. You cannot do this yourself in the nicest way possible. Stop trying to do it alone or thinking that you have to, or that there's some sort of I don't know, rite of passage to saying you've done it alone. Get a team, get a partner, like get someone to build it with you and share the wealth.
Absolutely. And as we close here, where can people follow your work? How do they get in touch with you? Where do they learn more about Minds on Fire?
Of course. So our website is mindsonfire.ca. They can reach me at marcus@mindsonfire.ca, M-A-R-C-U-S. More about our work. I mean, our website is a good place. We do post quite frequently on LinkedIn of what projects we're working on. We've been a little slow over the last month, 2 months, but we've got our content calendar back up and running and coming online. I mean, best way is just to reach out and chat with me. I mean, I rarely have a conversation that does not end up in some mind on fire moment where some new idea or new passion spurs out of it. I have too much fun with it. I find it's like a gift and a curse. I can't talk to many people without getting into what huge thing they want to do next. Absolutely. I mean, and I'd love to chat to anyone that wants to think about what's possible.
And for the audience, if you can't find Marcus on LinkedIn for some reason, or you're not connected to them and you need an introduction, I'll be very happy to facilitate an introduction. He's connected to me. So reach out to me and I'll facilitate an introduction to Marcus and his team. Marcus, I want to thank you so much for joining me today as we wrap it up here. Any last comments before we terminate?
Oh, I don't think so. Just best of luck to everybody watching this. I want everyone everywhere to be the CEO of a business one day. I know it's not for everyone, but I absolutely love it. And I just wish everyone the best.
Absolutely. Marcus, on behalf of the audience and myself, I want to thank you so much for joining Localization Fireside Chat today in helping me record episode 147. I really appreciate your time. And for the audience, thank you so much for listening in. And if you're coming in on YouTube, thank you for watching us. And just remember to like, comment, and share this content. I appreciate your support. And our channel continues to grow. Thank you for your support. And I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Thanks, everybody.